growing as restless as he. The disturbing information that Parizada had dropped in their laps regarding the reemergence of the vampires wasn't helping his uneasiness. Now, not only was his mate out there away from his protection, there were vampires who had decided to crawl from the bowels of the earth. Ciro felt pulled in two different directions. His need to find his mate, but he also needed to destroy the blood-sucking leeches. Though the vampires had kept a very low profile for a very long time, they were an evil race with nothing good in them. As long as they survived, they were a threat to anyone he cared about. The rhythm of his paws hitting the ground was a comforting beat that helped him focus his chaotic thoughts and brought him a small measure of peace. Being surrounded by nature in his wolf skin was a high that was hard to explain to those who weren't Canis Lupus. There was just something amazing about being connected to the natural world. He looked forward to the day when he could share it with her. He would have to wait for that day. Ciro knew, though he wanted to meet her so very badly, it wasn't time. For whatever reason, something deep inside of him knew that it wasn't time to meet her. He didn't know if it was because she needed more time, or if perhaps he was supposed to deal with the current tribulations before they could be together. Whatever the reason, he'd learned to listen to his instincts. So until the day came for him to meet her and claim her, he would do whatever task the great Luna had for him, and trust the goddess to keep his mate safe. Anna shivered as she followed behind the surprisingly quick pixie woman. Her feet seemed to be on autopilot because her brain certainly wasn't telling them what to do. She was too focused on the fact that she could feel, literally feel, a man's emotions. It was intimate, too intimate. He was determined, worried, frustrated, and a whole slew of other emotions which were scrambling her own. Anna pushed branches out of her way as the pixie woman went deeper into the forest and veered off the path upon which they had been traveling. She guessed that it had been around 20 minutes since the woman had found Anna hunched over on the ground. Since she'd told Anna to follow and the gypsy had agreed, they'd been moving quickly. There was a small voice in the back of Anna's head that kept asking her why she was running. Since the minute Perry and the others had entered her mother's shop in New Orleans, she'd known that her life was about to change dramatically, and she had been excited about it. And now, though she still didn't want to return to her old life, she was terrified of what this new life would entail. Anna's attention was drawn from her thoughts at the sound of running water. She followed the pixie woman around a sharp bend and had to backtrack a few steps to keep from plowing into her. Anna's mouth dropped open at the sight before her. A crystal waterfall cascaded down in front of her, splashing into a sapphire-blue lagoon. It wasn't a huge waterfall, maybe only 15 feet high, but the vibrant colors of the blue water and the green foliage was breathtaking.
"We have to go through that," the pixie woman pointed at the water.
Why? Anna asked hesitantly. She eyed the waterfall warily, staring at the slick, moss-covered rocks, and then at the deep basin of water. She searched for the bottom, but though the water was crystal clear, it was much too deep for her to see.
"Well, we could go around it, but then he'd be able to follow your scent. If we go through the water, your scent will end here."
Anna's mouth formed an O as she nodded.
Is there anything in the water that I should be concerned about?" Though Anna was a competent swimmer, she hadn't forgotten that this was the pixie realm, and she had no idea what kind of beings, other than pixies, lived here. Who knows what could be hiding in that water? The pixie woman tapped her chin as her face scrunched up in thought.
"Well, now that you mention it, there are some merpeople that inhabit this lagoon. If you don't swim fast enough, then they might try and tag you. If they do that, then you're it. That means you have to stay in the lagoon and play water tag with them for all eternity, or until another human comes by and you tag him or her. But who knows when that will be?"
Anna's eyes widened as they shifted from the woman to the water and then back to the woman. Anna opened her mouth to say something. What, she wasn't sure. Then the pixie burst out into a high-pitched laugh.
"You should see your face,"
the little pixie said between racks of laughter.
"I'm only messing with you, healer. There is nothing in the water that would harm you. I'm not saying there aren't things that could harm you, but they wouldn't. You are a gypsy healer, sacred among many supernatural races, not just the wolves. You will be fine. Now, follow me.
To Anna's surprise, the pixie dove into the blue water and began swimming across, lightly skimming across the surface of the water. She used her arms and legs, as well as her wings, to propel herself along, frolicking in the water as she went. Anna stood frozen for several seconds, nibbling on her bottom lip, trying to argue with herself about why she should just turn back around and go back to her friends. The argument ended abruptly when she heard another howl, this time much closer. Anna dove into the lagoon without a second thought. The cool water rushed over her as she broke through the surface and plunged deep into the cove. She opened her eyes to a plethora of life teeming in the lagoon. The scene looked like something that should have been in the deep ocean, not in a freshwater lagoon. But then again, she was in a pixie realm. Who was she to say what should be in their bodies of water? There were fish of all different sizes and plants that swayed rhythmically in the currents. Anna decided that if a crab suddenly started singing "Kiss the Girl," she wouldn't be surprised in the slightest. She was quickly running out of air. Giving one last look at the underwater flora and fauna, she kicked hard, propelling herself back up to the surface. As soon as her face was above the water, she saw that the pixie woman had made it all the way across and was now standing on the opposite bank. She was making some motions with her hands and her lips were moving quickly. When she saw that Anna was watching, she motioned for the girl to hurry. Anna kicked hard with her legs and pulled the water with her arms, quickly moving herself toward the opposite bank. As soon as she reached the rocks upon which the pixie was standing, Anna climbed out of the water. Her long, flowing skirt now clung to her legs, making it difficult to move. She reached down and pulled up the material, gathering it in her hands and twisting it. She squeezed until all she could get out of the skirt were drops instead of gushes of water. The pixie woman turned around to face her after several more moments of hand-waving and near-silent muttering.
"Ready?"
Anna shook her head.
"First, I need to know three things."
The woman folded her arms in front of her and gave Anna a look that said to hurry it up.
"What's your name? What were you just doing, and why are you helping me?" she asked. "Fine," she huffed. "If you insist on doing this now, don't come crying to me when that wolf comes barreling across that water. Dogs can swim fast, you know. My name is Adira. That's Adira."
She pronounced it slowly, as though Anna couldn't have gotten it the first time.
"I was working a little magic to alert me when your wolf gets close, and I'm helping you because I have a soft spot for women dealing with pushy men."
Adira glanced back at the direction they'd come from, and then looked back at Anna.
"Now, is that enough information to tide you over until we aren't sitting ducks, waiting on the pack of Labradors to catch us?"
Anna's eyes widened.
"Crap. Yes, I'm good. We can have girl time later. Lead the way."
Adira's eyes narrowed.
"Are you sure? I'll be happy to tell you a little more about myself. Let's see, I was born in a little hovel in..."
Anna's head spun around as she heard leaves rustling.
"Nope,"
she nearly hollered as she grabbed Adira's hand.
"Don't care where you were born. Let's just go."
The little pixie woman laughed as she took off at a run with Anna in tow. The sounds of more howls and growls didn't slow Anna down. She kept running without looking back, though there was a part of her that desperately wanted to see him. Let's be honest. There was a small part of her that desperately wanted to turn and run straight back, hopefully, into his arms.
"Gerda, why are you running?"
Anna nearly fell over when his rich voice caressed her mind.
"Are you okay?"
Adira asked as she glanced back at her, though neither of them slowed their run.
"He spoke to me."
Adira's eyes were the ones to widen this time.
"That's not good. If he's able to use your bond to speak to you, then that means he is close. Pick up those long tree trunks you call legs and move."
Anna was breathing like a freight train when they finally came to a stop. She leaned over, placing her hands on her knees as she sucked in great gulps of air, trying desperately to fill her deprived lungs.
"What are we,"
Anna attempted to speak around her breaths,
"doing?"
Adira was waving her hands in front of her and muttering under her breath again. She paused and looked up at Anna.
"I'm making my place a little more accommodating for you."
Anna didn't understand the statement, but decided it wasn't important. Air was what was important at the moment. She stood up and raised her arms over her head, attempting to suck up as much of the precious oxygen as she could. After several minutes, she was finally able to breathe normally again.
That should do it,
Adira said as she clapped her hands together.
Welcome to my home.
She motioned to two large trees growing closely together. Anna was about to comment on the very lack of a home, but then she was struck dumb as the trees seemed to stand up and step away from each other. What the? Anna mumbled as she leaned in closer, staring at the moving trees. She watched in amazement as the trees separated, pulling their leaves and branches with them, creating an opening which could only be described as a doorway. The doorway was just large enough for Anna to fit through. She stepped forward at Adira's encouraging. Once inside, she heard the leaves rustling again, and she turned just in time to see the trees move back to their original places, again intertwining their branches, effectively closing them inside. As her eyes adjusted to the darkness, she could see a small circular room made of what looked like tree bark. A canopy of leaves rested overhead, blocking out the sunlight. Then a bright flame jumped up in the small hearth on the opposite side of the room, casting a soft glow across the pixie's home, and Anna's eyes twinkled in delight. Adira's small hut was something out of a fairy tale, complete with bowing branches for a bed and tweeting birds for music. There was a circular rug in the middle of the room that looked to be made of vines, and to the right of the rug was a small table and chairs. Little knick-knacks carved from wood and stone adorned the shelves of two cabinets, and books lined another. Anna felt as though she were looking at one of the small gnome houses that she often saw in the flower shops near her mother's store. "Did you do all of this?" Anna pointed around the room. Adira smiled.
"Home, sweet home!"
Then she waved her hand and said a word in a language that Anna didn't understand, and suddenly a chair, big enough for Anna to sit in, appeared. "Whoa," she breathed as she looked from the chair to the pixie.
"You aren't in Kansas anymore,"
Adira said as her smile widened. "You know the Wizard of Oz?" The pixie laughed.
"Things get boring here sometimes. I can't help it if the human realm has better entertainment than ours."
Anna took the offered seat and sank into the soft plushness. It wasn't until she was completely enveloped in the arms of the chair that she realized just how tired she was.
"Why don't you sleep, dear Anna?"
Adira's voice had taken on a musical quality, and though Anna wanted to ask her about it, she found that she couldn't make her mouth work. Her eyelids grew heavier and heavier until she could no longer hold them open. Adira's voice was the last thing she heard as she drifted off.
"Rest now, child. Your questions will still be there when you awake."
Adira watched as the healer slept. Even in sleep, she was restless. The pixie female couldn't believe how young she was, and yet the wolves expected her to take a mate. The child had barely even tasted life. How could they think it was okay to tie her down to someone? And not just to anyone, she was to be the mate of a dominant, possibly even an alpha. Adira might not be a Canis Lupus, but she'd been around long enough to see the dynamics of the true mates. The males were in no way disrespectful or cruel to their mates. They were actually the opposite. They cherished, loved, and completely adored their females. But it was those very emotions that often made the males act irrationally in their need to protect their mates. The Canis Lupus may live in the human realm, but they were very different from humans. The dangers they faced on a regular basis were far greater than anything the humans faced. Regardless of this, to try and put their mates in a bubble in order to protect them from those dangers was foolhardy. It took a very strong female to stand up to the dominant Canis Lupus. Adira didn't know the human in her home very well, but from what she'd seen so far, she didn't know if this one was strong enough to keep her wolf from putting her in a gilded cage. She didn't know if the Fae, Parizada, had been straightforward about the world Anna and the other healers were entering into. And when she'd seen the fear on the girl's face, Adira had decided that she would make sure she knew exactly what was expected of her. Most of all, she wanted the human to understand that she had a choice. She needed to know it before she was standing before her mate with the power of the bond, and his charm and beauty muddying her mind. Anna needed to understand that once she accepted the wolf as hers and allowed him to claim her, there was no going back. The finality of the mated pairs was absolute. Adira would be lying if she said she didn't want devotion like that. Oh, she wanted to protect Anna because she was young, but Adira wasn't young. After dealing with the Pixie King's brother and his inability to commit, she was envious of the Canis Lupus and their commitment to one another. Anna stirred in her sleep, pulling Adira from her thoughts. She heard another howl and felt chills break out on her skin. Perry would be more than a little ticked off that she'd interfered. But then Adira was sure the High Fae deserved the irritation. And even if she didn't, the Pixie was sure she would eventually. Chapter 4
Werewolves are real. Fae are real. Pixies are real. All sorts of supernatural beings are real. These are just a few of the things that my girls and I have discovered in the last few months. One might think that all of that information would be frightening, and it is, but it pales in comparison to the sight of one of those werewolves losing his true mate. Stella.
Jewel didn't know if she could pick herself up off of the cold floor. The pain was gone, but the nothingness left behind somehow seemed even worse. Had Dalton felt the same thing? Had he endured the same pain, but with no idea what was happening? It was just another addition to the list of idiotic situations that she'd gotten herself into.
"I'm sure that was quite a shock,"
Vulcan's voice filled the cold room. Jewel wanted to scream at him. She wanted to rant and rave. Who was he that he could choose her fate? Why, she started to ask herself another question, but stopped. She knew who he was. He was a man born with great power already at his fingertips and, regardless of the fact that he was a Fae, was not immune to thirst for more. Men like him, human or otherwise, would never be satisfied. He wouldn't be content with only having one gypsy healer, even if she alone could accomplish his plan. He will want them all. She was a fool to think that she could keep her friend safe by giving in to him. But then she'd already come to that conclusion some time ago. Apparently her subconscious wanted to make sure she knew just how stupid she was.
"Thank you for that," Jewel told herself. "I hope that you are able to carry on today. You still have much to learn,"
Vulcan said with a gleeful tone. She pushed herself up to her feet but didn't look at him right away. Taking several deep breaths to compose herself, she shoved aside her anger and put on her best, "I want to learn," face. When Jewel finally raised her head, she met Vulcan's eyes. There was spark in those eyes that didn't belong, not in someone so dark.
"What's next?"
she added in a voice that she hoped sounded eager. She must have succeeded because he motioned for her to come over, the hideous, gleeful spark never leaving his eyes or his
face. "As you have seen,"
he began, as he took another book to the already covered table.
"The spells you and I perform require blood. They always require a sacrifice."
"Perry doesn't need blood for her magic," Jewel pointed out.
Vulcan frowned at her as he pointed to the chair next to the one he had commandeered.
"Yes, well, that's because the magic she uses isn't nearly as powerful. The wielder can use that magic without being fully committed to it. Giving blood to the spells, however, seals a covenant between the wielder and the magic. In return, the magic gives an abundance of power."
"You speak as if this magic is corporeal, and instead of you controlling it, you are actually its servant."
Jewel realized too late that her captor might not like being called a servant to anything, magic or otherwise. His hand connected with her face so forcefully that she had to grab onto the table to keep her chair from tipping over backward. The pain was instantaneous and exploded through her jaw, radiating all the way to the top of her head. Jewel squeezed her eyes tightly closed as she righted her chair. She took slow breaths and composed herself. Oddly enough, the facts about the human skull are what helped calm her. Her brain immediately reached for the applicable information she had filed away there.
"The human skull has 22 bones. At birth, it has 44, though the actual number at adulthood is debated, because some scientists consider certain bones two pieces while others don't.
The facts continued to pop into her mind like little ping-pong balls being tossed around. The information distracted her enough that she was able to hold back the tears. Tears would only make her look weak. When Jewel finally opened her eyes, there were two of Vulcan looking back at her. She blinked furiously because two of Vulcan, even if just a distortion of her eyesight, was too many.
"I should have warned you that I have no tolerance for insolence," Vulcan bit out.
"Note made," Jewel said, though what she wanted to say was, "I shouldn't have to be warned about cruel behavior from a diabolical psychopath. Really, it goes with the territory."
"Now, where were we?"
Vulcan turned back to the book, as if they'd been having a pleasant conversation and she hadn't just been clocked in the face.
"As I was saying, dark magic requires a sacrifice. You mentioned that it seemed corporeal and you're close. Some dark magic can begin to take on a life of its own. If the one using it becomes weak, the magic will choose another host to give its power to."
"Can it just be anyone who has power?" Jewel asked. Her words sounded a little garbled from the swelling that was beginning in her face.
"If you mean will it jump into the next cruel little being that crosses its path? No. The host it chooses must already possess powerful magic of his own. And he must be willing to use that magic for self-gain."
He seemed to be waiting for her to say something else, so she asked the next question that popped into her head. "Does the amount or source of the blood matter?" A smile appeared on Vulcan's face as he beamed over at Jewel as though he were a proud parent.
"Are the others as intelligent as you?"
he asked. Jewel gave her most innocent smile as she answered.
"It doesn't really matter since I'm the only one you're going to have. Remember our deal?"
She knew he remembered the bargain they'd made all too well, but she also now knew that there was no way he was going to uphold his end of it.
"True,"
he said as his smile remained plastered into place.
"I was just wanting to know if I happened to get the most intelligent healer of the bunch. No harm in asking."
He turned back to his book and flipped a few pages before answering her question.
"The blood source and amount is very important. Human blood is second in potency, supernatural blood being the most valuable for a spell. But if the blood is from the human the spell is actually being performed on, then the spell will become more powerful."
Jewel listened, and though it was fascinating to her, she was also listening to learn something that she might be able to use against Vulcan. It was several hours later when he finally shut the fifth book he'd shown her and stood up.
"I suppose you are probably hungry."
She figured it would not be good to point out the human body could actually go 3 weeks without food. The way Vulcan's mind worked, he would probably make her starve for 3 weeks and a day just to see if it was true.
"Keeping the body fed and hydrated increases learning capacity and comprehension."
"Really, Jewel?" she thought to herself. "You just had to throw out a fact. Couldn't just say, 'Yes, I'm hungry.'" But as always, when Jewel was nervous or scared, any information useful or otherwise would often just pour out of her. Maybe soon it would come in handy, and she could just bore Vulcan to death with useless knowledge.
"You may take lunch in your room,"
Vulcan said, and turned on his heel and strode away, giving her no indication where she was to obtain this lunch. But Jewel needn't have worried about her sustenance. When she walked back into her room, she noticed that a plate of bread and bowl of some sort of broth were waiting for her on a table. She was relieved to find the partially clothed males had been removed. After eating the bread and drinking the broth, she climbed up onto the bed and folded her legs in front of her. Jewel had been given an information dump, and now she needed to process it. As she shifted through the things she'd learned, a single overriding thought kept coming back to her.
"How can I use this against him?"
She'd decided that if she couldn't escape, then she'd do the next best thing. She was going to kill Vulcan. If she died in the attempt, then so be it. At least her friends would be safe. And without Dalton, she had nothing to live for anyway.
"But what about Dalton?"
the little voice in the back of her head whispered. Would he even miss her if she died? Now that the bond was completely severed and there was nothing pulling them together, what would keep him from finding someone else? She didn't want to think about it. Regardless of the bond, Jewel still wanted Dalton to be hers. But when did she start getting everything she wanted in life? If she'd not been his true mate, if there'd been no fate sealed between them, a man like Dalton Black would never have given someone like Jewel more than a passing glance. And even then, it would only be because of her red hair. It drew eyes like sugar drew ants.
"Thank you for that," she told her hair. "Now I'm talking to my hair," Jewel said as she closed her eyes and let out a slow breath.
If she lost her life attempting to kill Vulcan, she would at least be ridding the world of her oddities and the possibility of her passing them on to her offspring. If that's not taking one for the team, then she didn't know what was.
Perry stood staring after Gustavo, who had disappeared into the forest. She looked around at the people who had their eyes pointed in the same direction.
"Well, that's a problem," she said, walking farther into the circle that the group had formed.
"Have you always been the queen of understatements?" Sally asked Perry.
"Hey, Sally,"
Stella smiled, noticing that Perry and Gustavo hadn't been the only ones to join them.
"Hey, chicks, having fun yet?" Sally grinned back. "Sally's here?"
Heather perked up from the spot where she sat.
"Please tell me that you brought us something fun to do. This whole sitting and strategizing is for the birds."
"Just what are you going to do there, Stevie?"
Perry asked the blind healer.
"That was a little more accurate than Helen, granted my parts are a tad different," Heather pointed out. "But to answer your question, I bet my senses rival that of the wolves. I've got a wicked sense of smell and acute hearing. I could totally help in searching for Jewel."
Perry smiled. She liked the healer from Texas, though she would never admit that out loud.
"While I appreciate your enthusiasm, the wolves have one up on you. They won't walk into trees if someone forgets to guide them."
Krina let out a bark of laughter and quickly covered her mouth and muttered behind her hand.
"Sorry, it's been boring,"
she reiterated Heather's complaint.
"Well, if nothing else, I would be a good source of entertainment," Heather said good-naturedly.
"Could we address the fact that there is a crazed wolf running through the pixie realm?"
Adam spoke up.
"Before he wolfed out, he asked where she was. Obviously, he meant his mate. When he realized none of us here were it, he found Anna's trail and took off after her,"
Stella explained. Perry tried hard not to let out a string of curse words. When Acanis Lupus began acting on instinct instead of listening to the rational man, bad things usually happened.
"Where exactly is Anna?" Sally asked.
"She said she needed to go on a walk to clear her head," Elle answered.
"And you all just let her wander off?"
Costin practically growled.
"Hey, Sally's boy toy, pull it together," Perry snapped.
She turned and looked at Soren, who was the oldest, besides Adam, of the group.
"You obviously didn't think there was any sort of threat. And, by the way, where the heck is the High Fae who brought the Alpha here?"
Perry asked, looking around for Alston.
"He sort of disappeared," Kara answered.
"Convenient,"
Perry grumbled. She looked back at Soren, waiting on him to answer her first question.
"Honestly, Perry, how were we supposed to know that an Alpha would appear out of nowhere demanding to see his mate? We thought you had them all contained at your house. There truly wasn't a threat when she left."
"Fair enough," she conceded.
"What do we do now?" Stella asked.
Everyone was staring at her, waiting for an answer. Perry rubbed her forehead as she considered the options. She could take a few minutes and hunt down Alston, just so she could introduce him to the tree branch that she planned to beat him senseless with. What was he thinking, bringing a wolf as dominant as Gustavo here, where his very young and very human mate was taking refuge? She had no clue what was going on. It was obvious that the High Fae hadn't been around the wolves enough to understand just how intense they were about their true mates. She was pretty sure Gustavo wouldn't hurt Anna, but that didn't mean he wouldn't hurt any unknowing pixie that got in his way. For that reason, she couldn't just let him roam free in the pixie realm.
"Damn," Perry grumbled. "Damn, damn, damn."
This was just one more complication that she did not need.
Why can't you wolves ever do what you're told? Is it really so hard to obey simple orders? I tell you to stay. That means you should stay. If I tell you not to do anything stupid, then you should go out of your way to avoid all things stupid.
The others watched as the High Fae blew off the steam that had been building inside of her. When she finally stopped griping, Elle stepped forward.
You done?
She asked her longtime friend and comrade.
Perry shrugged. Can't change it now. Just have to try and salvage the situation.
Okay, before we make any decisions, Sally held her hands up. Why don't you tell us why you are here? She asked Perry.
I need some information. It will be a tad tricky to get.
Sweet, dangerous mission. Now we're talking.
Heather grinned as she rubbed her hands together with way too much glee.
Calm down, G.I. Jane, Perry snorted. The being that has the information I need is a little bit off his rocker.
She stared at Stella and Heather.
Each of the supernatural races has their own historians, individuals who keep a log of the important events in the race's past. But there is also one master historian, a being who is tasked with keeping records on all supernatural creatures. But dealing with him is never easy. We only confer with the historian when there is no other option. I could try to see if the Fae Archives have anything about this type of break in the Wolf Bond, but I'm doubting we will have any information on such a specific topic, especially since it pertains to another race.
Another supernatural? Sally practically whined. When are you going to fill us in on all of them?
So, are you asking if now would be a good time to tell you that me and the boys just killed a coven of vampires?
Perry asked, a single brow raised as her lips quirked up in an almost smile.
I don't even know what to say to that,
Sally breathed out as she leaned up against a tree. Costin patted his mate's back, but spoke to Perry.
Is everyone okay?
That depends on your definition of okay. Did Dalton lose his crap, killing the entire coven by himself and then try to attack me? If that's your definition of okay, then yeah, everything is great.
Perry ignored the gasps that traveled around the group.
The information I need pertains to Dalton's rage. Dalton thinks Jewel is dead.
Sally, Heather, and Stella spoke at the same time.
What? No. Impossible.
Krina hadn't said anything, but Perry could see the fear on her face. She'd grown attached to the healers just as the rest of them had.
Why does he believe this? The she-wolf asked.
Just before he went postal, he felt an intense pain, and then nothing. He said the pull that he had toward Jewel, even before they were bonded, was gone. There was just nothing when he thought of her.
Perry saw the horror on all of the males' faces and understood their fear.
But if she's dead, why is he still alive? He did the blood rites before she was taken,
Costin pointed out.
I don't know. Apparently the bond was severed at some point after the blood rites. He'd mentioned it a couple times, but even though the bond had been severed, he still felt the supernatural connection to her. He still craved her, still needed her. He still felt the way you males feel about your true mates,
Perry explained.
But now...
Now that's completely gone.
Sally's voice was soft and her face had lost all color. He must be hurting so badly.
I think it's a different pain than when the bond is severed. He seems confused.
If I know you, Adam spoke up, you don't think she's dead.
Healers don't die on my watch,
Perry's jaw clenched.
Not to mention that it doesn't make any sense. Vulcan didn't take Jewel just to kill her.
So who is this mysterious supernatural being that you want us to pay a visit to?
Krina asked, breaking the sudden tension. Perry glanced at Elle and Adam before answering.
His name is Thadric.
Both of the Fae groaned.
I was really hoping that you were not going to say that name, Adam exhaled, rubbing his brow.
Perry, when was the last time someone even saw him?
Elle asked.
I don't remember when he was last sighted, she admitted, But we know he's around. He's immortal, after all. We're simply looking for a guy who prefers not to be found.
Call me stupid, but generally speaking, when a person goes to an effort to keep from being found, it's because they don't want to be found, Heather pointed out.
Stupid, the High Fae said as she gave the blind healer a dry look, even though the woman couldn't see her. Then she huffed, It's just not as satisfying when you give me permission to insult you.
Parizada, focus, Sally said as she clapped her hands, attempting to get everyone's attention. How do we find this Thadric? Oh, and perhaps you should tell us what kind of supernatural he is, and any etiquette we should know, like how you don't look a dominant wolf in the eyes unless you are prepared to fight him.
He's a djinn, El offered.
And you should strive not to piss him off, Adam added.
Well, Stella let out a deep breath.
Then I would say this quest is doomed before it even starts.
Perry nodded.
I'd have to agree, considering there isn't a being standing or sitting before me that hasn't managed to make me want to turn them into rat turds.
I thought it was just turds in general, Costin said.
Perry shot him a wink. When it comes to turning this crowd into turds, I'm an equal opportunist in the species of turds. Besides, variety is the spice of life. How mundane would it be to have all of the same type of turds lying around?
Gustavo's feet hit the ground hard as he followed the scent of his mate. He had no doubt it was her. He'd touched her mind and felt her fear. He hated that she was afraid of him. No wolf ever wanted their mate to fear them, but until she got to know him and know their ways, he knew it wouldn't change. He didn't understand why she was running, what had caused her to take off on her own. He noticed that after his howl, her speed had increased. This had only taunted his wolf, of course. The wolf liked to play, to chase, especially if their mate was the prize at the end of the game. Gustavo turned a bend and nearly barreled straight into a fast-flowing stream. Her scent ended there. A waterfall flowed down a cliff on the opposite side of the bank where he stood. She had to have crossed the stream. It was the only explanation. The water must have dissipated her scent. Without another thought, Gustavo dove into the water and paddled across. The cool sensation felt good on his hot body. He took a few laps of the water, just as he was climbing out on the other side, and felt refreshed as the wet liquid quenched his dry throat. Gustavo pressed his nose to the ground, attempting to pick up her scent once again. But instead of Anna's scent, his nostrils were hit with something else. His head snapped up, though not too high, considering the being that stepped out of the foliage to face him wasn't even 2 feet tall. The female pixie eyed him curiously. She crossed her arms in front of her and tilted her head slightly as her eyes narrowed.
"You're not what I would have pictured for her," she said as she continued to examine him.
Gustavo was beginning to feel like a bug under a microscope. It was a feeling he didn't appreciate. He raised his upper lip, exposing his long fangs and letting out a low growl.
"Whoa!" the female held up her hands. "I wasn't insulting you. I was simply stating an observation. She seems too soft to be the mate to one so dominant."
Gustavo was phasing before he even realized it. The pixie was speaking of his mate, which meant she probably knew where Anna was. Unconcerned with his own nudity, his unwavering gaze met hers.
"You know my Anna?"
"First of all..."
The woman waved her arms, and suddenly a pair of pants appeared on the ground in front of him.
"I don't talk to naked men who belong to someone else. Second of all, what makes you think she's yours?"
He slipped on the pants, impressed by the pixie's power, but not so impressed that he let her insolence slide.
"I felt her," he pointed to his head. "I've been in her mind. She is my mate. I spoke to her."
"See, that's the problem with you possessive males. You assume that because some supernatural bond says that someone belongs to you, then it is so. No questions asked."
Gustavo stared at her, and he knew his face probably spoke volumes on how dumb he thought her observation was. Of course, the bond made it clear who they were to mate, and, of course, there was no question. It just was.
"What is your point, female?" he asked, unable to hold back the snarl.
"My point is, though you might see Anna as yours, she quite possibly may not agree. And she may not see you as hers. She's human. She doesn't understand," the pixie answered softly.
Gustavo understood what the woman was saying, though his wolf did not like it. The idea that Anna didn't claim him made his heart clench painfully in his chest. He knew that she didn't understand his world. She was still young, even though she was considered an adult by her own race. He needed to give her time, but he wanted to be a part of that time. Gustavo wanted her to get to know him. He wanted Anna to trust him. But he also knew that as long as she remained unbound, he was a ticking time bomb.
"I can give her all the time she needs to adjust after we complete the blood rites," he told the pixie, unsure why he felt the need to explain himself.
"And just how well do you think she's going to take it when you tell her you are going to bite her and take her blood? And then she has to do the same with you. How do you think she will handle the intimacy that such an act brings?"
Gustavo's eyes narrowed.
"How do you know so much about our bonding?"
She shrugged.
"When you're small, nobody notices you. And my ears work just as well as any larger being's."
She unfolded her arms and took a step toward him.
"You're missing the point, Alpha. The point is that Anna is scared. She's scared of everything that has happened since she left her life with the humans. And she's scared about what is to come. She's scared of the bond between the two of you. Biting her and asking for her bite is not going to squelch that fear."
"Again, how do you know so much?" he rumbled.
"Again, I have ears."
The man in him completely understood Anna's fear and hesitancy. The wolf in him knew that if she would just let them claim her, she would see that he would always attend to her happiness, health, safety, and provision. They would take care of their mate.
"Prove ourselves as strong and capable," his wolf rumbled in his mind. "See, but to a human female that isn't always the most important thing. We can keep her safe, we can feed her, and we can play with her. What more does our female need?"
His wolf truly didn't understand that human female needed much more than just the necessities to stay alive.
"Let me help ease her into our world," he told his beast. "If you lose her, I will take over the hunt."
Gustavo was dominant, but there was a reason he was dominant, and that was because his wolf was so dominant. His wolf was powerful, and when faced with a situation that called to his wolf's instincts, it was possible for the beast to take the driver's seat. Sometimes it was necessary, but more often than not, the world was a safer place if the man stayed in control.
"I would like to see her," he told her with all the patience he had left in him.
"Try again,"
the little female pixie challenged.
"We could just eat her," his wolf suggested. "She is small, not much meat, but at least then she would not stand between us and what is ours."
Gustavo wasn't shocked by his wolf's matter-of-fact nature. He saw a problem and figured out a way to eliminate that problem. But he knew they couldn't eat the pixie. First, because she knew where Anna was, and second, he had a feeling that it would greatly upset his mate.
"Please," he bit out through teeth that could no longer pass for a human's. "Will you let me see her?"
"No. See you, sucker."
The pixie waved and then just disappeared. Gustavo tried to pounce, but his hands wrapped around empty air where the little female had been standing.
"Aroo!"
his wolf howled into the forest, as anger pulsed inside of him.
"I told you we should have eaten her."
Maybe it was time he started listening to his beast's ideas. Chapter 5.
There was a time when I told myself that I only needed to be brave 5 minutes longer. I'm pretty sure that 5 minutes passed a long time ago, but the only other option was to curl up and start rocking and drooling down my chin. Since drool dribbling down my chin just didn't seem like a dignified way to handle the situation, I've decided to extend the 5 minutes. A hero is no different than an ordinary man. He is just braver 5 minutes longer. I can do this.
Jewel Stone. The door to her room flew open, slamming into the stone wall with a thundering clap.
Vulcan strolled into the room looking entirely too much like the Joker from the Batman movie she'd watched with her mom last summer. His eyes were wild and his grin was much too big, as though a stick had been forced in between the creases of his lips, holding them open in an unnatural expanse. The only thing missing was the white face paint and disheveled suit. Jewel climbed off the bed, her movements slow and deliberate.
Vulcan seemed to be already riled up, and she didn't think it would take much to aggravate him further.
Her face still hurt like a brick had been dropped on it, and she wasn't really interested in a repeat beatdown anytime soon. She watched and waited as her captor paced her room. His mouth was moving as though he was speaking, but she couldn't hear anything he was saying. Finally, after several minutes, he stopped, turned, and locked her in his crazed gaze.
"I liked it better when he was a muttering, pacing Joker look-alike," she thought to herself as she met his eyes.
"I hope you got sufficient sleep. We have a lot to do, tons to do," his voice rose as he spoke. "So much to learn."
Jewel had to stop herself from asking him if he'd taken his medicine that morning, because she was pretty sure that that would end up in her face hurting even more. But she was seriously beginning to wonder if Vulcan wasn't taking some sort of drug, maybe some fey mushroom or something. His behavior was increasingly manic, and he was growing more and more grandiose. She couldn't help but think of another ridiculous way he might die. Perhaps his inflated ego would strangle him to death or cause his head to explode. She was probably putting too much hope in such bizarre ways for a person to die. But when faced with evil like Vulcan, it was easy to hope for the bizarre.
"I'm ready to learn," she said, hoping she sounded convincingly enthusiastic.
Really, what she was ready for was a way out of the hell she'd gotten herself into.
"Suck it up, Buttercup," she told herself. "You wanted to save the day, so now you have to pull up your bootstraps and deal with it."
He motioned for her to follow him, and she was relieved that he didn't feel the need to lead her by the hand again. His touch was like a million little maggots crawling all over her hand. It was definitely a sensation she could do without. Once they reached the same room they'd been in the day before, Vulcan headed for the table with all of the books stacked upon it. Apparently, Vulcan had worked through the night, because now the table contained many more books than it had the previous day, and they were teetering on the edge, threatening to fall to the floor. She followed and took the chair on the opposite side of the table. Staying out of arm's reach seemed like the intelligent thing to do.
"I've been doing a little research of my own and found something that I think you might find interesting, and perhaps even a little relieving, considering your innocence."
Jewel leaned forward just a bit, very interested if there were a possibility she wouldn't be fighting off numerous would-be bed partners. Vulcan opened a large leather-bound book that looked to be very, very old, and turned to a page he'd previously marked. His finger ran down the page and stopped when he'd found what he was looking for.
"Ah," he said. "Here it is. Witch magic," he began reading, "is born from the blood of a powerful fey that has chosen to practice dark magic. The blood of the fey is infused into the female, who is offering herself as a vessel for the magic. There are sacrifices that must be made once the blood has been transferred in order to activate the magic. If the fey is in a position to utilize a gypsy healer, the blood magic will be even more potent, producing stronger witches. There are two ways for a healer to be used. The first is for the healer to bear children after the fey blood has been introduced into her system. Any such children born will always be female, and will have the magical power necessary to become both gypsy healers and witches. The second method of utilizing a gypsy healer is far less invasive. The healer, after having accepted the blood of the spellcasting fey, need only infuse her own blood into another female. This latter method immediately produces fully mature witches, but the former produces a direct bloodline of gypsy healer witches."
Jewel's breath had been sucked from her lungs, as though a vacuum had been placed over her mouth and then turned on high. She knew that what he was saying meant that she didn't have to be violated in one sense, but she was still going to be violated. Vulcan was going to put his blood inside of her,
He was going to take the very evil that ran through his veins and pump it into hers. How on earth would she be able to fight something that was a part of her? How would she stop herself from becoming just as dark and twisted as the man before her?
"I'd thought she'd be a little more excited than this."
Vulcan's voice pulled her from her desperate thoughts.
"Of course, if you'd rather bear the children..."
"No," she said a little too loudly. "This would be better because, like it says, the witches are fully mature. You wouldn't have to wait for them to grow up, and you wouldn't have to wait at least 9 months in between each one." And wasn't that just peachy? She was basically offering herself up like an escort service with Vulcan as her handler. Only, instead of bringing money back to her pimp, she'd be bringing back witches.
"I'm glad to see that you are beginning to come on board with this. It will make the process much easier if I don't have to beat you into submission."
He paused, and his face became vacant, as though he was no longer there in the room with her. A few minutes later, he stood abruptly.
"I was hoping to get more accomplished today, but it seems I have business that I must tend to that cannot wait."
The door slammed shut as Vulcan walked out, and Jewel stared at the thing that was standing between her and freedom. She had to get out. As much as she loathed the idea of birthing a child with a strange man, or even Vulcan himself, ew, at least then Vulcan's plan would come to fruition much slower. But what he'd shown her today was much worse. Maybe not for her personally, but for the supernatural world, it could be catastrophic. Now she was facing the immediate conversion of who knows how many witches. Jewel couldn't be the vessel that led to such a fate. She walked in a slow circle around the room, her eyes roaming over the walls. It was a very old castle, and she was thinking that maybe there might be some sort of secret passageway. Her knowledge on ancient history was pretty good, and she knew from her studies that, more often than not, castles had secret passageways built into them in various locations as a means for escape if under siege by invaders. They were also used for more nefarious things, such as those not wanting to be seen going from one bedroom to another. Jewel ran her hands over the stone walls, slowly attempting to feel for any hidden latch or loose rock that gave way under a gentle push. After at least 30 minutes of searching, she'd yet to find anything. Plopping down on the bed, she glared at the walls, as if it were their fault that she was stuck behind them. There had to be some way to get out of the room. Her eyes once again landed on the door, and her brow drew tightly together. "Surely not," she mumbled as she rose from the bed and walked over to the door. Her hand shook a little as she reached out for the latch. She pressed her thumb down on the release, fully expecting nothing to happen. But she was wrong. The latch gave way, and the door pulled open.
"Shut up," Jewel said into the empty hall that stretched out before her.
He'd left the door unlocked, which obviously meant he was confident in his ability to keep her from escaping. Did that bother Jewel? No, because a possible fruitless chance was still better than no chance. It was a trap created by the captor that she had chosen.
"You knew what I was when you picked me up," she muttered under her breath,
a quote from an old fable about a boy who helped a snake because the snake had promised not to bite him. But, predictably, he bit the boy anyway. The boy was shocked when he asked the snake why he did such a thing after having promised he wouldn't. The snake answered with that quote, "You knew what I was when you picked me up." And now Jewel was the boy who had trusted the snake. Her snake just happened to be an ancient, evil fae. As she stepped out into the hall, she paused, waiting to see if some alarm would go off or if a net would suddenly fall on her and trap her. When nothing happened, she took another step, and then another. She glanced back over her shoulder after a few moments, and noticed she was a good 50 feet from the doorway.
"Guess we're doing this," she told herself, as she turned and faced the dark corridor.
"How much longer is your mate going to take?"
Dylan asked Lucian as the three males stood on the dark street. They'd vacated the bloody mess and were standing next to the manhole that led down to the den of vampires Dalton had just destroyed. Dylan figured it wouldn't be long until someone decided three large men standing in a dark alley couldn't possibly be up to anything good and called the human authorities.
"She apparently had to make a detour," Lucian answered. I've explained to her that it isn't good for us to linger here much longer.
Dylan gave him a curt nod of thanks and then turned to look at his beta. He'd known Dalton for a very long time. For the majority of that time, he'd watched his beta lock himself away from the rest of the world. It wasn't until Dalton had laid eyes on Jewel Stone that something in him had changed. For the first time, Dylan saw life in his friend. But that brief glimpse was gone, and standing before him once again was a man held captive by his past and unable to allow himself to live. Before Jewel, Dylan was pretty sure Dalton was ready to succumb to the darkness growing inside of him. As Alpha, it would be Dylan's job to destroy Dalton before he could hurt innocence. It had been a short-lived relief that he wasn't going to have to kill one of his closest friends. Now, the future wasn't so certain. With no bond connecting Dalton to his true mate, he wasn't sure how her death would affect his beta. Normally, a male would have to be killed if his mate died and the blood rites hadn't been performed. But Dalton might be able to control himself since there was no connection. Dylan didn't know which was more merciful, to put the wolf and man out of their misery or to leave them to live a life of solitude. Dalton knew his alpha wanted to ask him if he was okay, but he didn't because Dylan already knew the answer to that. He was about as far from okay as a man could get. He stood with his back against one of the buildings that enclosed part of the alley, his arms folded in front of his chest with his head leaning back against the hard brick. The moon was bright, and it called to him, wooing him with the promise of peace and rest. It was a lie. There would be no peace for him, not without Jewel. Even though he didn't feel a pull toward her, he still felt as though she belonged to him because he was choosing her. Bond be damned, he wanted Jewel Stone, and yet he didn't even know if she was still a part of the world. What if she wasn't? What then? Would Dylan need to kill him? Would he rage the way a male who'd lost his unbonded mate would? Dalton felt his wolf stir. Yes, he would rage. He would rage, and the world would burn down around him as he attempted to make others feel the loss he was enduring. He squeezed his eyes closed tightly, trying to recall the memory of her sweet face, her vibrant red hair, and her unique scent. She was the sun in a life that had been plagued with winter. She was the brightest star shining into the darkness that had eaten away at his soul. His jewel, his little dove, with an olive branch offering him hope. "How are you doing?" His alpha's voice chased away the brief glimpse he'd gotten in his mind's eye, and had his eyes flashing in irritation. Dalton didn't want to speak. His wolf wanted nothing more than to shed the human skin and run, run and never stop. "We must find her," his beast rumbled into his mind. Yes, he agreed, and they would. Dalton would never stop searching for her. "Dalton," Dylan's voice, firmer this time, prodded again. He turned his head slowly and met the eyes of his alpha briefly before looking over Dylan's shoulder. He hadn't lowered his eyes. Submission was not in his vocabulary at the moment. But challenging Dylan would only take up time that could be spent looking for Jewel.
"I'm as can be expected."
He didn't say as good as could be expected because there was nothing good about him. Good had fled the minute he'd felt the rip in his soul. "And your wolf?" his alpha asked. Dalton knew what Dylan was really asking. Was his wolf in control of the man, or was the man in control of the wolf? That was a good question, because at the moment, Dalton didn't really know. It was as though their grief and anguish were so intertwined he couldn't even begin to separate their feelings to figure out who was in the driver's seat.
"He is what I am,"
he answered, unsure if his words made sense to anyone but him. He was thankful when Dylan gave a single nod and then stepped back. His alpha knew him, and he knew that, like any male in mourning for their female, he needed space. They stood for several more minutes in tense silence before Perry finally reappeared before them. She looked at each of them and then let out a deep sigh.
"You three couldn't be more obtrusive if you each held signs that read, 'Werewolf, we'll eat if you get too close.'"
Lucian shrugged. "It is not our goal to appear cute and cuddly. Did you get the information you needed?"
She shook her head.
"Only more questions."
Dalton let out a snarl that his wolf refused to hold back.
"What use are you?"
Perry shot him a glare. You are still on my list, Wolf. Do not push me further.
Dalton pushed away from the wall, taking a menacing step towards the Fae. He was tired of every lead being a dead end. He needed results, and the female wasn't giving them to him.
You claim to be so powerful.